Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome back to Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams, and of course, Tech Talk is your regular source of technology news, reviews and interviews from a blindness and low vision perspective. And we're very keen to receive your feedback, contributions, thoughts, comments, questions, all that good stuff. So why not drop us a line? You can email techtalk at rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Joining us again here on RNIB Tech Talk are our co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. Tasneem, hello, welcome in. How are you?
Yes, I'm very good. Thank you, Dave. I'm looking forward to exploring the new smartphone, so hopefully we can all have a discussion about that later on.
Brilliant. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I believe you're in the market to get yourself a new, a more modern, updated phone. What's going on with you, Callum?
Hey, hello, Dave. Yeah, things are going pretty well with me. Thanks. I'm trying to sort out my home network at the minute. I found there's a few dead spots with my Wi-Fi, so I'm trying a few different things out there. Right now, I'm sat here surrounded by cables, which is fun.
Always a joy. So we look forward to learning what you find perhaps in a future show. So Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman, our co-hosts here on RNIB Tech Talk. And I'm, of course, Dave Williams. And it's my pleasure to be with you. Looking forward to another week in technology. Coming up this time on RNIB Tech Talk, Callum will be getting his hands on the liquid level indicator. We'll also be hearing from Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team, where we'll be discussing the latest devices to keep track of your health and fitness. And Joe Franks will be along to tell us about RNIB's Access IT magazine. That's all coming up this week on RNIB Tech Talk. Sometimes when you lose your eyesight, completing even the most basic tasks can be challenging. What about making a cup of tea, for example? Well, Callum Stoneman is along now with his product review of the liquid level indicator.
Here on Tech Talk, we tend to talk a lot about the apps and software that you can get and the fancy stuff, if you like. But it's worth pointing out that there are some devices that are standalone specialist devices that are very easy to use and very affordable and very useful. And this device is one of those. So this is the liquid level indicator. And all this device does is basically tells you when your cup or glass or jug is nearly full. And that's about it. So it's a very simple device. There's really nothing fancy to it. On one side of it, it's kind of flat. And from the top, you've first got the little grill, which I'm assuming is the speaker. Coming down from that, you've then got two little magnets. So you could attach this to your fridge door, perhaps, for storage. So then you always know where it is. And then further down towards the bottom, you've then got a little door, and that is the battery compartment. And you can just slide that out and replace the battery when you need to. This uses one of those batteries, one of those little small round batteries that tend to last about 3 years, so you get quite a long time out of this. And that's all there is on one side. And now on the other side, there's three little probes, I think is how they describe them, on the RNIB shop. So these three probes, you've got two long ones and then one short one in between them. And these probes kind of hang into the cup, and when the liquid hits the two long probes, you will get a series of long, slower beeps to let you know that your kind of liquid is near the top of the cup or glass. And then when it hits the shorter ones, when it's a bit more full, you then get a series of shorter, more continuous beeps, which basically means, okay, it's very full, it's about to overflow, basically. So I'll just give you a quick demo of this now. So I've got a cup here. This will fit on most cups and mugs and glasses and jugs and things like that. So I've just got it hanging over the cup now. The probes are kind of dangling in, and I'm just going to start filling this up with water. And in a few seconds, you should hear the sort of slower, longer beeps that I was talking about, or basically the first level. So I'll turn on the tap now and we'll start filling this up. And in a few seconds, we should hear those beeps. Okay. So there's the beeps. And to shut this up, we just take it out of the cup. There we go. And it's kind of reasonably close to the top now is the water level. And then the second level kind of comes in useful. Let's say you're making a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, for example. And you wanted to know, so now you've done your hot water and now you want to put your milk in, but also make sure that you don't overflow it. That is where the second level comes in useful. So I'm going to put this back over the cup. It will start beeping again, and then I'll fill it up a little bit more and you'll hear the difference in beeps. So I'll do that now. Okay, put a little bit more water in. There you go. You can hear the difference in beeps there. So I'll take that out. And now I can feel that it's very near the top. It's kind of, you wouldn't want it much fuller than this really, otherwise it'd probably be difficult to carry it and pick it up without spilling it everywhere. And that is basically it. And then when you're done with this, you can dry the little probes if you want, just maybe give them a wipe with a tea towel if you wanted to, but you don't particularly have to. And then once you're done, you could just store this wherever you want. As I said, it's got the magnets there, so if you want to just attach it to your fridge door or something, you can do. And that's it. That's all there is to it. And this is, you can get these in different forms. So this one was just an audible one, so it just does the beeps. You can get a vibrating one, so it'll do vibrations instead of beeps. Or you can get one that does both as well. So you can get one that does beeps and vibrations. So that could be useful if you've got a hearing impairment, or maybe if you've got one of these in the workplace and you don't want to be annoying your colleagues by the beeps every time you go and get a coffee, you could use the vibrating one there, I guess. The audible one that I've got here is £11.99 currently from the R&IB shop, or £9.99. excluding VAT. So there you go, that is the liquid level indicator.
Callum Stoneman there with his review of the liquid level indicator. And Callum's with me now. Callum, do you, like, hand on heart, do you actually use a liquid level indicator day to day? Is that your bag?
I wouldn't say day to day. I mean, when I'm doing hot drinks, I use the one cup kettle as well, which I guess we could look at in future, but that's, you know, a really easy device to use as well. I do use it when I've got guests though, because to be honest with you, if I'm doing a cold drink for myself, or even if I'm putting the milk in my cup of tea, you know, I'll use my finger just to check the level. Don't necessarily recommend that, but when I've got guests coming over, I do use this because I'm sure they wouldn't appreciate me sticking a finger in their drink, especially in the COVID era.
Yeah, and probably it's quite a, you know, more affordable solution as well than something like a hot water dispenser. You know, you mentioned one cup there, and you know, that's ideal because you just press the button and it decants the amount of hot water that you actually need into the cup, so you don't have to check the level so much. But obviously those devices are going to cost you a little bit more, so I guess it depends on your budget and the context.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
Tasneem, how about you? What things do you sort of use to stay safe in the kitchen?
Very similar to Callum, really. Just the finger measure when I'm making drinks for myself, cold drinks, that sort of thing. I don't have a hot water dispenser, but normally because I've got a very large mug of tea, and I think I probably need it to kind of dispense two cups worth. There may be something like that around in the market, but yeah, very much the finger test. I don't use the liquid indicator. I usually find them quite a bit of a faff, and it's just faster for me to use a finger, because it's simpler, easier and faster for me personally.
Using the technology you were born with. And I know a lot of blind people listen and can sort of tell by listening how far up the you know, the vessel, the water has traveled. You know, that sort of distinctive sound you get when you pouring liquid. Some people can tell. I mean, I struggle, particularly in a, you know, in a noisy kitchen when the microwave's pinging and the kids are running around or whatever. But I know some blind people who can do that.
Very impressive. I personally not really tuned into that aspect, but yeah, amazing for those who can.
Yeah, I can't do that. I've got to be honest.
Well, the liquid level indicator remains one of RNIB's best-selling products, so very, very popular choice and maybe useful for many. Thanks very much, Tasneem Marshad and Callum Stoneman, for your review of the liquid level indicator. We know that getting out and access to exercise and fitness and health can be hugely challenging for those of us who are blind or partially sighted. And anyone following my escapades over the last couple of years will know that I've got quite heavily into running, and there are all sorts of benefits, not just the obvious things of the, you know, the physical losing weight and all that stuff, but of course the social benefits as well, meeting new people, going to new places and increasing my visibility. And sometimes when it gets hard, it's really useful to have access to metrics about my progress, and devices such as Apple Watch can be hugely useful in helping. So here to explore some of those issues and the technology that can enable blind and partially sighted people to stay motivated and get motivated, it's Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team. Now, about 4 years ago, I discovered the joy of running outside. Now, before you reach for the off button, fitness is an area that can be challenging for blind and partially sighted people like us to get into. But technology can really help us with that, giving us the motivation and the statistics and the data that we need to keep us going, especially when it gets hard. Now, somebody who's here with me on the line to explore this subject and share what technology he uses and recommends is Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Really good that you could join me. Just give me a sense of you. Would you describe yourself as a fitness guy? Has it always been that way? Do you run? Do you cycle? What do you do?
So I do run. Yes, that's correct. I used to run for a running club for about 5 or 6 years and then stepped away from there to pursue football, which has always been my first passion.
Has that always been the case? Have you always been a sort of active, physical kind of person?
Yeah, I mean, I played right through younger years and did different forms of sport. Obviously, you'd be put into different groups at school and at sort of university because of and college because of, you know, the disability, and it should be about inclusion. But I'd be broken off with groups of friends, and we'd do, you know, slightly different activities with the sport that we were doing and support around there. But as we will discover shortly, and as I will talk about shortly, the technology has made a huge difference. The football now for me is brilliant because the coach we've got, the setup we've got at Cambridge United is excellent. Is getting better. The more support we get from them, the better we feel in terms of local and national competition.
Yes, there are lots and lots of issues there. Transport to where you need to do your training, finding a group of people that are also committed to the activity, and making sure that you've got the right space and equipment. So lots of challenges and barriers to overcome. But as this is Tech Talk, let's focus in a little bit on some of the technology that you use to support your physical activity.
Yeah, by all means. I mean, something we used throughout the pandemic and was we used, obviously, we've done workouts with Zoom and Teams. Obviously, people will be very familiar with those virtual platforms, but also we've followed plans that are developed and specific training programs that are in a dedicated program called the Nike Training Center, or NCT, NTC for short. This is an application which is free. It used to be costed, but it went free around the time of the pandemic. And what we love about it is it's accessible for both Apple and Android from both a magnification and a speech point of view. So not only do you have the speech from what your screen reader will offer, but also during the workout, you're getting audible information, audible feedback on where to put your hands, where to stand, what action to do with the weights, where to lift the body, where to position your body. Quite descriptive, as well as an actual audible time tick down, and it will tell you how long each exercise is. It'll beep at the start and it'll beep at the end of the exercise and it will go on to the next one. It'll also tell you, for example, if it's a rep-based or a time-based workout. It'll even have breaks in there to sort of, you know, have a rest break, or make sure you breathe. And all this has been put together in an extraordinary way for somebody, I think, as a great resource. You've got options to browse different types of workouts based on body type, based on what muscle group you want to work, how long you want to work out for. And you can even store the workouts down when you finish them. You can even record them, and it will actually then build up a profile, sort of, you know, how long you've done the exercise for, when. You can score how difficult it was. You can record if you did it outside, in the gym, or, you know, at home. And I think it's a brilliant tool. The nice thing is, as well, for us, we all like a bit of a pat on the back. So similar to my other hobby, which is gaming, you get sort of achievements when you've, you know, if you've exercised 5 days in a row, you'll get a little trophy come up. It'll tell you you've got a little trophy. If you've done a certain type of exercise, or you've pushed yourself really, really hard, or you've exercised for a longer period, you'll get those things pop up as well. So the options within that are absolutely fantastic. You can bookmark different exercises. You can share your progress on the workouts. There's an eating plan within there. So for me, that's been a very, very powerful tool. That's been a very, very powerful application. In terms of sort of other devices I've used, I've tried Fitbits out. Again, they're very comfortable. They're very good. We've still not got a complete talking Fitbit, but hopefully that will come. We've also got, obviously, loads and loads of different smartwatches that are available on the market. Samsung, for one, have developed theirs to a very, very high standard. I personally have the Apple One to go with my iPhone for consistency. But again, the screen reading in them is excellent on the new generations of watches. I always say, if you're going to go and try something out, see what the magnification is like on the device, see what the speech is like on the device, make sure you're happy with the gestures to be able to control that when we're out and about, and being able to actually set the right activity, the right length, and sort of get those metrics that you want to measure yourself, whether you're doing it as a casual person or someone who's taking his athletics or training a bit more seriously.
So the Nike platform, let's go back to that a second. So on the Nike platform, it sounds like it does a whole bunch of things. You mentioned diet and sharing and guiding you through particular types of exercise, timers, and all of that is accessible. Is that just a happy accident, or has there been some advocacy work done there with Nike to make sure that that platform is accessible?
I think a little bit of both. I think they're probably a little bit of a happy accident to start with, but there has been a lot of work done around it from what I've seen and what I've read up. I mean, I've certainly fed back to them. I know other people have fed back to them in terms of the forum about improving the application, and the menu design for people has gone under compared to what it is, has gone under an evolution even through lockdown in terms of, as I say, the filtering options and the choices for people. So I think a combination of both.
Is that an app that you just run on your phone, or do you need some sort of wearable as well?
No, you just can run it on your phone, but then you can actually pair with your watch. It'll come up to say, you know, track your workout with your watch. So essentially, if you're doing the workout on the phone, obviously you can have the audible beep of the phone, but you could also have an audible beep on the watch to say, you know, you've finished that particular exercise for that period, or it can be set to vibrate, which is generally what I have it on. So if I'm, you know, moving between exercises quite quickly, the phone can be, you know, on my coffee table, or you know, on top of my sofa as I'm working out, and I've got my mat and all my gear, and I know, yeah, I can audibly listen to it. But if I'm down doing a press up or down doing a sit up, you know, I know I don't have to get up, wait for the phone to beep. I know I can vibrate on my wrist. I know I finished the exercise. I can then get up. I can pause. I can move off my mat and I can start the next exercise. So I think the control within it is very, very good and is very nice. I think the thing that I like is it will also tell you when you go into the exercise, it will show you a preview of all the elements within the exercise in the terms of the routine. It will tell you if it's endurance, if it's strength, if it's, you know, no weights required, basic equipment required, and what the basic equipment is, and even full equipment. So depending on how much stuff you've got in your home, how sort of big your home personal gym is, because most people, for example, might not have any weights at all, or might just have a towel to stand on, and you know, might just be doing things with a couple of soup cans. So you can adapt it regardless of what you've got. You can find a way. You don't have to have brand new equipment. You can do an awful lot with just bodyweight drills.
Yes, I need to dust off my weights. I've got some collecting who knows what in the garage. I love my running, but cross training is important.
Yeah.
And doing some strength training is often advice for runners. Getting motivated, of course, is the challenge. You mentioned something there about having that vibration on your wrist, and I think that's something that gets overlooked often when we talk about accessible technology. We focus a lot on how do you enlarge the text on screen or change the contrast color or can it talk, but actually having that haptic feedback can be hugely powerful, particularly in noisy environments. I have Apple Watch, and if I'm in a race, you know, and I pass a mile or 2 miles, I get a little tap on the wrist, and that gives me a huge confidence boost, and I know that it's going well when I get that little haptic feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And other products, obviously, you know, Garmin have been in the game long before Apple and Samsung and the sort of the smartwatches came out with their running devices and the amount of different things. I used to have a lovely Garmin watch, cost me, you know, a couple of £100 a while ago, and again, you would have that haptic feedback. But I think I can do so much more now, but you don't necessarily have to spend a fortune. It's, as I say, like anything, it's about looking, it's about trialing and getting the right piece of kit. But if you want to invest and you want to take yourself a little bit more seriously, then go and look at the options for sure.
We'll be hearing more from Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team talking about fitness technology a little bit later on. You're listening to RNIB Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Dave Williams, and our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. What do you think about that, guys?
Yeah, really looking forward to hearing about the fitness and exercise. I love being outdoors, love my exercise, swimming, walking, just being at the gym. So, yeah, really looking forward to hearing more about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've had an Apple Watch for years, but just use it as a smartwatch. I've kind of ignored a lot of the fitness stuff on it, to be completely honest. But no, I need to start playing with it more and start getting out a bit more, especially now it's getting warmer. I think that's what I'm going to do this summer, try and get out a bit more, try and get my fitness up.
Still to come here on RNIB Tech Talk, we'll be talking about some of the considerations that you might have in mind when choosing a new smartphone. And we'll also be hearing from Joe Franks, who edits RNIB's Access IT magazine. Don't forget, of course, you can get in touch with us here at Tech Talk. Send us an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Finding high quality, accessible technology information. Well, we are surrounded by it, not least here on RNIB Tech Talk. But if you want something that's just really easy to digest, a simple monthly update, then perhaps Access IT is the magazine for you. To tell us more, here's Joe Franks.
I'm Joe Franks. I'm RNIB's retail content editor. That means I write new product guides, I write the product descriptions on the shop, and I also edit Access IT, which I've been doing for about 15 years now.
And what would we find in Access IT, Joe?
It's a monthly roundup of Access technology news. Because of the way we do it, I don't know what's going to be in it from month to month. It's not like a print magazine Once a month, I search the internet for news items to include, topics that come up a lot at the minute, Apple stuff, Android stuff, screen readers, accessible games and apps, and Windows accessibility, especially with the rollover to Windows 11.
So, I mean, it feels to me like I'm a bit kind of bombarded with technology news these days, you know, and the technology news comes sort of by the minute, by the hour. So I guess Access IT, you're looking for pieces that have got a slightly longer shelf life.
Sometimes, yes. I mean, if it's because of the way I'm doing it, I'm aware that there's a lead time. So a glitch that's in your iPhone today, and I know it's going to be fixed by next week, I'm not going to tell you about that, because by the time you get it, it'll be fixed. So it's, a lot of it's signposting things that are interesting. Beginner's guides, new tech products, how-to guides.
Yeah, so is that who it's for then? Is it really aimed more towards the beginner or more the seasoned technology user?
Well, we try to cover everybody. There's some things for people who've got their first iPhone, people who've got their first Android smartphone, and things for people who are experienced JAWS users. So things that I don't quite understand, but I know are useful, like bookmarklets for a thing in JAWS, those sort of small techie things that will make a difference.
Okay, so it's tips and it's kind of, you know, buyer's guides and things like that. And I mean, you're the editor now. Has Access IT, has it changed over the years, do you think?
It has. I mean, I've been digging around a bit into its history, and the best we can tell, it's about 20 years old now. When it started, it was very much focused on the Braille format. It was lots of short little news items, and you'd get a few longer reads. Whereas now, it's e-text only. There's some longer pieces and a lot of short bits where I will just explain to you what the link is so you know whether you want to bother clicking on it or not.
So, Joe, you've been with Access IT for a while now. You can perhaps reveal how long. Do you remember your first issue?
I do. I looked it up especially for you, Dave. And what was in there, Apple had plans for a talking iPod. Yahoo Messenger was about to become accessible. There was an article explaining what podcasts are and how to listen to them. And there was mentions of MySpace and the upcoming launch of Windows Vista. It just makes me feel very, very old.
Windows Vista. Yeah, some things are best left in the past. What would be your kind of what they call the elevator pitch, that horrible, you know, 10 seconds of, you know, why should we give Access IT a go?
OK, I'd give you three reasons why I would subscribe. It's edited for UK readers. So most of the things that are written that only interest Americans, I leave out, unless it's something that's clearly coming to us in a few months and it's worth you looking out for. It doesn't go in. We include reviews and articles written by our readers. And it is free.
Fantastic. Well, we like that price. Anything coming up? I mean, you said you're never quite sure what's in the next issue until you sort of start doing your research. I mean, in terms of the direction of travel, you mentioned Windows 11, of course, is a bit of a hot topic at the moment. Are you covering things like, you know, augmented reality and 5G and all those sort of emerging technology trends?
Ooh, do you know what? We're not. Maybe I should be. I might extend my Google search because.
Yeah, I mean,
I should.
Some of that stuff sort of feels so far like over the horizon sometimes, and then it kind of sneaks up and bites you, and then suddenly somebody's made a thing. So is that what you're more interested in, kind of consumer type stuff, or the areas where the research is happening?
I think it tends to be whatever bubbles up on the sort of on the searches around the keywords that you're using, because there's so much, as you say, you can't possibly check every site for everything. So it is trying to find a line through so that whoever picks it up, they've got at least three or four things that they're going to want to read.
Well, it's beautifully curated and it always makes me smile with the puns. So I really appreciate it, Joe, and all the work that you obviously put into Access IT every month. How do we get it?
You just contact our helpline on 0303 123 9999 and ask them to sign you up.
And what, and when you say sign me up, what am I going to get? Does it come as an email or how do I, what
formats?
You'll
get an email with a zipped folder which contains a text file and an HTML file once a month.
Perfect. Well, we'll be keeping tabs on Access IT. And if there's anything in there that you think is worthy of our attention, do come back on to Tech Talk. Joe Franks from RNIB's retail products team. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
For many blind and partially sighted people, our smartphones are indispensable tools that provide access to many aspects of modern life. Of course, for many, the smartphone can be overwhelming and difficult to use, and perhaps a push-button phone might be more appropriate if you just want to make phone calls. Tasneem, you are in the market for a new phone. Tell us about some of your requirements.
Yeah, so I've kind of been in this exploring new phone options for a while now and kind of been in this dilemma, really, because it's more about looking at features for me. I love the home button. I'm an iOS user, but I'm quite open to Android phones as well. So, yeah, I kind of explored the SE phone purely because it had the home button. I did actually go up to a later model of a iPhone without home buttons, but I really didn't get on with the Face ID, etc. I wasn't very keen on it and wanted to go back to a home button style phone. I love the fingerprint aspect, so I actually explored Android as well. But yeah, I'm still very undecided and would really appreciate some input about, and your thoughts and views on it.
And do you have any other requirements? Do you need a specific screen size? Do you need a particular amount of storage?
I mean, yeah, storage would be great. The more storage, the better. I have a gazillion apps and I'm always having to constantly delete from my old dinosaur phone that I've currently got. So storage would be good. Screen size, something around the 8+ sort of iPhone size would be great. I find that the SEs are a little bit small for my liking. I'm not using the screen, but just in terms of visually locating the phone for me, it's a little bit easier. I know a lot of people like the SE phone because it's small, it can fit into their pockets and things. And I'd actually looked at an iPhone 13 Pro, but I found that was really heavy. I mean, before I'd seen the iPhone 13 Pro, reading about it, I thought actually, potentially I was thinking of buying that one. But when I saw it in person and saw the size of it and how heavy it was, that quickly changed my mind. So actually the weight and size is very important as well. And I hadn't fully considered that aspect.
And does it matter to you whether your existing accessories, you know, chargers, cases, docks, that kind of thing, work with a new phone, or are you happy to replace your accessories?
I'm happy to replace the accessories, because as I say, my current phone is more of an ancient dinosaur phone. I'd like to sort of use the MagSafe option as a charger. So yeah, I'm very interested in fully updating.
Okay, so Callum Stoneman, you're the tech guy. Listening to Tasneem there describing her requirements, what options do you think Tasneem might consider?
Well, I think, you know, the thing with the iPhone is you get quite bought into, or with any platform really, even it's the same if you're on Android, you get quite bought into their ecosystem. Like, you know, for me personally, I have an iPhone, I've got a Mac, my wife has got an iPhone, we've got a lot of things on family sharing, and you know, so there's stuff that works for us. So I think kind of sticking with what you're used to is sometimes the best way. I think the new SE would probably do you fine. You know, the kind of mid-range storage option, I think it's 256 gig that you can get with the SE. That would probably do you really well. And obviously that's got the Touch ID thing in there. Android wise, I mean, there's no end of Android phones available. Whole range of, I guess that's the beauty of Android. You know, there's a lot of low cost devices out there. It's available on a lot more range of devices. And, you know, we're quite technical people overall, so that's what works for us. But, you know, if you're wanting something a bit simpler as well, there are phones like the Blind Shell Classic. They recently got a new phone out, and that's more of a feature phone. It's not a touch screen, I believe. It's got physical buttons. It's got a limited kind of app store with it, so you can use Audible on there. It's got its own character recognition app and, you know, product recognition. So that is kind of a much simpler option, you know, more kind of blind specific, I guess. You know, it's built with blind people in mind. I don't know much about this, but I believe there's the Synaptic phones as well, which am I right in thinking that can be installed on any Android phone? The Synaptic software? Yeah.
The Synaptic is very much a kind of, it's a separate company, isn't it? And it's got its own sort of devices. Well, it's still software that can be on Android devices for people who don't want to use TalkBack. But my understanding of Synaptic is that it's more for people with low vision. And when you're kind of navigating through the menus, it's kind of like, for example, with the iPhone, you have to double tap to select things. With the Synaptic, you would be taking your finger off your selection. So it's a different navigation system, but it kind of keeps you in that very, you imagine a wall of Synaptic. So I guess the only limitation with that is that if you're using third-party apps and things like that, then it might be that Synaptic isn't very compatible with that, because the whole software is, you know, very specific to low vision, and obviously it talks as well. So yeah, it kind of keeps you in that wall of Synaptic. So once you go out of that, then it might run into some difficulties with accessing other third party apps.
Useful to remember then that iPhone isn't the only game in town. Of course, you've got Android, and then specialist products like the Blind Shell or products from Synaptic. Taz, it sounds like the newer iPhone SE might be the way to go for you. It's not a plus size phone, so it doesn't have that larger screen. Would that be a showstopper, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, seriously, I'm considering it. I think I'm going to do a little bit more research. But yeah, I mean, I'm currently in the market for having some Android training for my works phone, because, you know, that's what they use. So it's going to be very interesting. I think I might wait until I've undergone my training with Android, to be fair, to then make an overall decision. But I'm kind of leaning more towards the SE.
Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad, well, good luck with your phone purchase, Tasneem. Let us know how you get on. And Callum, thank you very much for your expertise. You're with RNIB Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. We rejoin Mark Evans now from RNIB's Technology for Life team, where we continue our discussion of accessible fitness technology.
Affordability really can be an issue. You know, smartwatches, smartphones, they're quite expensive. Yes, they have come down a little bit in recent years. You can get an entry-level Apple Watch for about half the price of where they used to start. And of course, if you get a refurbished one or last year's model, it's still going to work perfectly well, so you can save yourself a couple of quid that way. But even more affordable than that, there are of course skills that you can use on your smart speaker. I'm thinking of something like, is it the Body Coach?
Yeah, there are lots of different, the Body Coach is very, very good. There are lots of different skills if people want to do that in their homes. Again, you will need a smartphone or a tablet, as we know, Dave, to install that skill, or a family or friends member. And then you can just try lots of different ones out. I'd say the best ones are, like anything with skills, the ones that you've got the most options for and you've got the most sort of control in that you want without it being too complicated to use and learn, I think is ideal. And obviously you've got it, you know, the quality from them in terms of sound is excellent these days, and you know, you can choose where you are with the individual programs. I mean, there's lots of different programs out there for fitness. There's things like Strava as well, in terms of the walking, the running, and the cycling, which is very, very popular. There's the Under Armour do theirs. I've tried theirs. But for me, I just keep coming back to I've tried other things on Alexa as well. And I've seen people say, you know, try this one. This one's great on Google and it works, you know, better for X or Y. But for me, I just keep coming back for the Nike app, for the for the simplicity and the ease and the variety, and at zero cost. You know, I think it's great value.
I started off when I got to about 40 years old and I realised I needed to be a bit more active, and I began with cycling, and I used to use RunKeeper. I used to put my phone in my backpack or the back of my cycling shorts or whatever.
Yep.
And it would log my distance and so on, and I could save it and look back at my previous ones. And I could also check in and see how my friends were getting on as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Ironically, I started cycling with a running app, but then when I started running, I started using Strava, which of course originally was a cycling app.
Yes.
And that's now where I do all my running, and I can see all the runners I know on Strava. I can see what they did, give them a kudo or like what they did. I really love reading those status updates, probably more than social media posts, because you know that when you see those updates that somebody's put in half an hour or an hour of physical effort. They haven't just taken a photograph of some beans on toast or something.
Yeah, I was about to say that, because that's a very much a fashion thing, isn't it, with the food and meals that people have. But let's just say this was my recovery or my pre-workout meal, and then you're like, okay. But I think if it's themed and it's what's it in, and something like you say, someone's put in that effort, they've put in that time, they've put in that dedication to work through that social side, to spur one another on. And I think the thing is with the running club and similar to football now is, you know, you're in a sort of a team environment. You're part of a club, even if you're doing your own thing. The same as you could be part of a club and still be doing your own individual football training plan or whatever sport training plan. It's nice to be part of something or to know. And I think a lot of blind and partially sighted people, like anything, we miss that interaction. We miss that connection. There is the travel and the transport element within that, obviously, what we've touched upon. And of course, the tech can help with that to a certain extent. But I think that's really, really big. Also from a well-being point of view as well, to be able to see, you know, someone's just sort of liked or commented on what you've done and said, well done. I've got a friend who's training for a half marathon at the moment to raise money for our football club and to also a CP, cerebral palsy charity. And you know, for him, having the ability to record things, and he's not a runner himself massively in terms of distance, to have that is huge, to be able to see and people can track his progress. And I think that's given him a boost, because also, let's be honest, weather, time, energy, how our eyes are feeling, all these factors come into play.
Yes, and it can be a useful backup as well. If you run with a guide runner or cycle with a tandem pilot, if your tech fails, they can tag you in their activity.
Yeah.
It's not going to pick up all the stats, like your heart rate, for example, but at least you can see the distance and how long it took on Strava, for example.
Absolutely. The other thing I would say, and this is going on to kind of more of an accessory now, but you can get sort of arm guards or arm shields, as they're known, and you can actually slot your phone into that. I know a lot of people worry about running with the phone for falling, dropping it, etc. But these are really, really useful devices, really well made. You know, Velcro straps. Some of them have got sort of a popping connection on that as well. And I think for me, that gave me great confidence. Less so with football, because obviously it's more physical and more tackling. But certainly, if I'm going on any runs or if I'm going on any cycles, if I don't take a bag, and if I just want a day with a bottle and my tech, then I'll use that. So running guards or shields is another tip for me. And again, price wise, we're sort of looking for a standard one. You're probably looking about $12.99. For a good one, you're looking just under sort of £20. So it's not a huge investment to protect your phone and give you a bit of peace of mind when you're out and about as well.
If you've got a cellular watch, or if you're able to carry your phone when you're cycling or running, there is a safety aspect to that as well, isn't there?
Of course, that was the next point I was coming to. You've read my mind perfectly in terms of being able to do so, because you can take other devices out with you to track X or to track Y, like I mentioned about the Garmin products. But if you fall, you've got no ice contact, you've got no ability to call somebody. And I think that is an element if you are going on a route which you perhaps know without a guide runner, perhaps you're training at a different time. Perhaps you're going for a later night run or an early morning run, in terms of lighting, etc. All these things we need to consider.
Indeed. What advocacy do you think we still need to do? You mentioned Garmin, and it's not the first watch I think of when it comes to accessibility. I know Garmin have done some work, but it does feel like there's still a little way to go there.
Yeah, I think so. In terms of sort of keeping up now with the sort of smarter watches, I haven't looked at their newer generation. If I'm totally honest, I haven't seen a generation for probably about a year or so. But they are still behind in terms of not applying magnification fully or text to speech (TTS) for short, compared to the Samsungs and the other Android companies that are producing different smartwatches or different variations, and obviously Apple themselves. I'd be very interested. I'd love to see Microsoft get in the race, and maybe even Google do a really, really nice top drawer option, because at the end of the day, we all want quality, but ultimately it'll give us choice and force the price down.
There are, of course, other specialist brands. I'm thinking of Chorus and Polar and some of those devices. Those sort of specialist ones tend to be less accessible. The ones that are more accessible tend to be the all-round smartwatches, like
yes,
the Apple Watch or the Galaxy Watch, that include messaging and music and all of that, which is great to have. But those specialist devices do tend to be less accessible, in my experience.
Yeah, no, I 100% back that up. I was just, as I say, thinking of that was the brand when I was at the running club. Everybody said, "Oh yeah, go for this because of this and because of how it tracks and because of the stability and because you'd probably get a discount saying it was through the club." So it was probably more I went for that more than relationship, because if people, like you say, if people traditionally think of Garmin, they might not think of necessarily a watch or that kind of thing. They'd probably think of a GPS or even a TomTom for a car, let's say. First and foremost, but there are specialist things. But like for everybody, I'd say try them out, have a look, see. But I think the companies need to up the game with those elements for not just as with visual impairment, but for all people.
So you might be listening to this and thinking, well, it's all right for Dave and Mark. They've got it sus. They're going out playing football and all the rest of it. But I'm sat here thinking, well, I find it hard to get down the shops. So what's the best way for people to get started, Mark?
I would say try and get in contact with a local club. Talk to your local society. It's to see if they've got any other opportunities for exercise classes or support within there. British Blind Sports also a great shout, because they've got a UK wide database. But there's also something called a County Sports Partnership, CSPs. My wife actually ironically works for the one for Peterborough and Cambridgeshire called Living Sports. If you can get a hold of the County Sports Partnership or CSPs and find out what's going on in your area, because there's so much development in disability support and trying to group certain people together for the love of keeping fit and well-being, I would say do that.
Yes, social media is a good place to find out what's going on locally. British Blind Sport, you mentioned, of course. You could have course reach out to your local running club or park run, and you don't have to run, of course. You can just walk around and they'll make you feel really welcome.
Absolutely. That's how a lot of people start, actually. The growth in that is absolutely huge in terms of the park run and people seeing it. You've also got another one you could look at. I know this is running specifically, but the BBC have a lot of options to help get into sport. The Couch to 5K program, that's done. There's a tremendous amount of options. But again, if people don't know, I can do some research. I'm happy to point people in the right direction.
That Couch to 5K app is brilliant. I remember my wife doing that, and we had Sarah Millican shouting out, "You're going great," and all that.
Yeah, I love the accent. I was about to do that myself. Anyway, hey, pet, keep it going.
Right. It sounds like your kettle might be about to boil. I'm going to let you go, Mark.
All right.
If
brilliant.
People need advice from the Technology for Life team about technology to help with fitness, what is the best way to get hold of you?
The best way to get hold of us is the standard method. So firstly, you can contact us via the helpline 0303 123 9999, or you can email us, and this is all lowercase, TFL, like Transport for London. So Tommy Freddy Lima, TFL at rnib.org.uk.
Mark Evans from RNIB's Technology for Life team. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Always good to hear from you here at Tech Talk. And Richard Foster from Aberdeen has been in touch and says that technology is here to improve our lives, although that can be influenced very much by our financial position. And of course, technology isn't just about smartphones and computers and tablets. And Richard has a couple of devices that he wanted to share. Firstly, the Nespresso coffee pod machine and an oil diffuser. Do you use anything like that, Callum?
Well, I don't use an oil diffuser, but we do have a coffee machine. We've got one of the Tassimo machines, which sounds pretty similar, really. And it's not particularly accessible, but it doesn't need to be. You know, you just put a pod in there, put a cup under it, press the button, 30 seconds later, off you go. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, we had a Tassimo and it was a bit of a gateway drug for me. I had it for about a year and then I decided I really needed to go the whole hog and get a bean to cup machine. So we've got a DeLonghi, 4200, and it's incredible. And you chuck the beans in the top and the coffee comes out the bottom. It's fantastic.
Nice, got a little cafe in your house there.
Indeed, yes.
We've received an email from Derry Lawler, and he really enjoyed the Echo demonstration. And he's saying that his favourite devices are the Ring doorbell. And he's very interested in knowing, his question to us is, what are our favourite smart devices connected to Lady A? So I don't actually have a Lady A set up, so I'm going to hand over to the chaps, so you can take this one.
So for me, I think our favourite smart device that we connect to the A-Lady, I'm going to go with the obvious one. It is smart light bulbs. My son particularly enjoys the fact that we can change the brightness and the colour. He likes the colour orange, so we often just do that. The other thing I like about it from a, you know, sort of blindness perspective is that I can be confident that all the lights are switched off when I'm in bed.
Yeah, I agree. I love the lights on mine as well. I think my favourite one, though, I've got something a bit different here. So I've got several smart plugs that I've got connected to Lady A. And one of them in particular, I've actually got on my kettle, because I've got the one cup kettle. So that's the one where you just put a cup under it, press the button, and it pours the hot water in for you. So what I do, I have to have a cup of tea first thing in the morning. I just can't start the day without it. So what I do is, on a night before bed, I'll put a cup under the kettle, put a tea bag in, press the kettle on, but the smart plug off, so it's not actually doing anything. And then first thing in the morning, as part of my good morning routine on Lady A, I've got the obvious things, you know, reads the news, reads the weather, starts a radio station playing, but it also flicks on the kettle smart plug. So that boils. A couple of minutes later, when I come downstairs, I've got a nice hot cup of tea waiting for me. Just need to take the bag out, bit of milk in, sorted. It's only a small thing, but, you know, I just really like that. I feel like it just saves me a couple of minutes. I think that's the thing with the smart plugs, though. You can put them on pretty much anything.
Is there another way of doing things apart from the smart plugs? Or is that the only way that you can actually connect the Lady A?
So the light bulbs talk directly. So I've got TP-Link bulbs, and so you don't need any kind of extra hub for those. They connect directly to the Wi-Fi router, so they can be controlled by voice or in the app. There are, of course, the Philips Hue bulbs, and they do require a hub that you connect to your router. I guess the great thing about the smart plugs is that you can use them with any device. So, you know, even if you wanted, if you say you had an electric heater, for example, or you had, you know, as Callum says, his one cup or some other device that you wanted to come on at a specific time. We used to have those plugs with the little plastic switches round in a circle when we were kids for putting, you know, timers on lamps and that kind of thing. But the modern equivalent, you can do it with your voice or your app.
Brilliant.
Ricky Lomi writes in. He's got a question. He says he doesn't want to badmouth Nokia, but they released a few years ago their 8110 4G phone, which they touted as their blind-friendly phone. But he says he's heard that in South Africa, the screen reader doesn't talk, but in other parts of the world, such as India, it's fully accessible, apparently. And he says, again, doesn't want to badmouth Nokia, but how can the phone be accessible in one part of the world but not in the other? And is anyone in the UK using this phone? Well, I don't think we're familiar with this, but if any listeners are, it would be good to hear from you, because that is a strange one. That is interesting.
It's not a phone I'm familiar with. Thank you to everybody who has sent in good wishes via Facebook and Twitter. We've heard from Farsight Finance, Accessible Android, Paul Foster as well, and a number of you asking about repeats and podcasts and different ways in which you can get the show. So we are first on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. UK time on RNIB Connect Radio, which you can listen to on Freeview channel 730 across the UK on FM in Glasgow, and of course via your smart speaker. You just have to say play RNIB Connect Radio. And then the programme is repeated on a Thursday evening at 9 p.m. and again on Saturday at 5 p.m. So those are the kind of the main opportunities to listen. However, if you are somebody that prefers a podcast, then that will become available on Friday. If you'd like to get in touch, we would, of course, love to hear from you. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Next week here on Tech Talk, we'll be talking with Steve Tyler, who is the Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire. Callum, you're going to be demonstrating the Jaws for Windows sound splitter feature, and we'll also be interviewing one of the founders of What3Words. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. You can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. It's your programme, so let us know what you think. And that's it from myself, Dave Williams, Tasneem Arshad.
Bye for now.
And Callum Stoneman.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.